If you're a parent, you know, kids can be expensive. But starting in July, if you make under a certain amount, you could start getting hundreds of dollars a month from the federal government to help with some of those costs. That's after Congress and President Biden approved an expansion of the child tax credit in the latest round of COVID-19 relief. Our next guest says debate over whether to continue the allowance touches on decades-old discussions about which parents and which moms in particular deserve aid and which ones don't. Claire Kane Miller writes about gender, families, and the future of work for the New York Times. Claire, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Claire, before we dig into the history a little bit, can you tell us about this new thing, this change in the child tax credit? How's it going to work?
So the child tax credit has been around for a while, but President Biden has changed it so that it is universal, meaning everybody can get it, even people who don't work. The only people who can't get it now are the richest families in America, and it's a pretty small percentage that it doesn't apply to. It goes to the children. So if grandparents take care of them, if they have a single parent, if they have an unemployed parent, it doesn't matter. They still get the benefit. It's also going to start coming in a monthly check to families instead of as a tax credit at the end of the year, meaning that it actually affects families' day-to-day lives and that they can use it for things like food and rent and not have to wait until April.
This was a limited term thing in the relief package, but there's talk, you write, of keeping it around. What's the state of debate on that right now?
So the Biden administration, as part of a plan they're introducing this week, a major bill called the American Family Plan, is going to propose keeping this around through 2025. There are also two bills in Congress, one by Democrats and another, interestingly, by a Republican, Mitt Romney. Both would make a child credit like this or a child allowance permanent.
And as you mentioned, there's some Republican support for this idea and some Republican opposition. How is the Republican Party broken down on the idea of sustaining this this wider net in this family assistance program?
So it's interesting. The idea of a child allowance has generally been supported by people on the left more than on the right because it involves a new government program. It involves government spending, taxpayer dollars, all things that many Republicans try to avoid. But there's been growing support for it among some Republicans, like I mentioned, Senator Romney of Utah. And the reason is that there's a growing split on the right between social conservatives and economic conservatives. And economic conservatives continue to want to avoid raising government spending and really want to prioritize families working for pay and earning enough money to support themselves without any government aid. Social conservatives, however, really value things like the traditional family and stable families, two-parent families, mothers who can stay home with children, things like that. And they're starting to realize that, the way that jobs and childcare are in the United States right now, that can be really, really hard to achieve, and that some government spending can be necessary to help families do what these social conservatives want them to be able to do.
Talking to Claire Kane Miller from the New York Times about aid to families with children. There's some new stuff out there with COVID relief, maybe here to stay. But Claire, in a piece you co-wrote on this, you look back at the history of federal support for people with kids and found kind of conflicting messages in the debate over who should have this or who should be encouraged to work. Can you spell some of that out for us?
Sure. Over time, aid to families with children has been pretty controversial, specifically when it comes to race. The debate in America has never been about whether mothers should work for pay or stay home raising children, but which mothers should. Really, since the time of slavery, Black women and Black mothers have been expected to work for pay, while white mothers have been expected to stay home with their children if they can. Of course, these lines also cut along class and other things, but throughout the policies that have been passed in this country over centuries, race plays a really big role. Black women have always had higher labor force participation, and a lot of the policies that did help women support themselves and their children, if they didn't have a husband or a job, purposefully excluded Black women for much of American history.
And you mentioned that split between social conservatives and economic conservatives now, and that really fits into that debate, doesn't it? The idea that, okay, do we want to support what people might think of as a traditional family with a parent at home versus do we want to encourage lower income families to work?
That's right. And the dynamics of families have really changed since we last had this debate on a national scale during the welfare reform under Bill Clinton in the 90s. Then, of course, there was the stereotype of a welfare queen. It was always a stereotype, but there was this idea of a single Black mother who was having kids just so that she wouldn't have to work and could keep collecting money from the government. And things have really changed. Single parenthood has risen. The marriage rate has fallen. More policymakers on both sides of the aisle are likely to have single mothers in their constituency. The drug crisis has really no longer seen as an urban problem. The opioid crisis is, of course, happening throughout rural America. And jobs have changed. Middle-class jobs have disappeared. They're not as stable. They're not paying as much. It's harder to support yourself on one salary one job than it used to be. Childcare costs have gone up. And so I think policymakers are looking at families right now and realizing that this idea of this single Black mother living off government funding is really no longer relevant and actually never was.
There's the notion of work requirements attached to a lot of this kind of aid. And as you say, now that's changing, at least with this currently limited term program. Do we know much about how those work requirements have worked when it comes to getting people out of poverty versus the costs of childcare and things like that that come along with working for low-income families?
There's a debate about this among scholars. Welfare reform in the 90s created a program called Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, which replaced what we used to call welfare. And it had a work requirement. Child poverty did decrease after that. Employment of single mothers did increase. But we also know that the economy in the late 90s was booming and poverty decreased for everybody and employment increased for everybody. And so it's hard to say exactly how much work requirements made that happen. And work requirements also ended up leaving a lot of mothers without a job and without any benefits, or mothers being forced to send their children to low quality childcare arrangements because it was all they could afford in order to meet their work requirement.
This is an old debate. There's a new wrinkle, though, as we're trying to come out of this COVID-19 pandemic and the huge impact it has had on our economy. Claire, I know you've looked at how parents and how moms in particular have been juggling work with sometimes increased responsibilities of parenting with kids at home from school. What kind of things are you seeing?
Mothers are really in crisis right now, as anyone, parents are in crisis, but mothers are shouldering the load, as anyone with children knows. In some places, schools are still closed. In other places, they're only open a couple hours a day, or there's no aftercare, or they have various closures. It's been really difficult. A lot of women have left the workforce, not by choice. And I think that policymakers and voters have seen how easy it is for any family to slip into a health crisis or an economic crisis, and how aid is not, aid is necessary and not always tied to someone's, personal responsibility. We have also seen, of course, how much parents rely on outside systems for childcare. Whether you're a rich family or a poor family, you were never really able to raise children on your own without outside support. And when all that outside support closed down, it became very clear how much we needed. And so I think that has accelerated a conversation policymakers were already having about how much help working families need right now.
And we've been talking about health in the form of payments from the federal government to those families. There's also been talk over the last few years about increased family leave or support to help people pay for childcare outside of the home. Are those things part of the conversation right now in 2021?
They absolutely are. And again, I think that this is a conversation that some policymakers have been having, and the pandemic has really accelerated it because it's made it very clear. And President Biden's expected this week to introduce the American Family Plan that will have a lot of these things in it, including funding for public nationwide pre-K. There's talk of national paid family leave. He's also looking a lot at elder care and people in the sandwich generation who are caring for both children and aging relatives. And so all of this stuff is suddenly on the table in a way that it hadn't been before. At the beginning of the pandemic, some American workers got paid family leave for the first time in American history. And that program expired at the end of the year. Congress didn't renew it. But now that people have seen how these benefits can work, I think that there is suddenly a little more appetite for them.
As we wrap up, Claire, what are you watching for next on whether or not these temporary programs for family aid are going to become more than temporary?
I think the question is how much Republican support they can get. If they are passed through reconciliation, that process in Congress, then they will not need that much Republican support. But it's unclear if that is going to be possible. However, there are Republicans like Senator Romney who have voice support for a universal child allowance. So it will be interesting to see if this could end up becoming a bipartisan issue.
Claire, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Claire Kane Miller, correspondent for The New York Times, who writes about gender, families, and the future of work. She was with us today to talk about her recent piece, A New Benefit Raises an Old Question, Which Mothers Should Work?